smoking colitas, federales are loading their guns, blowing smoke from their six-shooters, spinning their barrels for fun. Contrabandistas, banditos of light. Yeah, we're the free Mexican Air Force and we're flying tonight. High in the hills we are harvesting sweet centimia. Oh, the law wants it all cause they think that the wild weed can free of mine. And that's why the free Mexican Air Force, Mezcalito riding his white horse, the free Mexican Air Force is flying tonight, flying so high.
You are tuned in to KWMR 90.5 Point Reyes Station, 89.9 in Bolinas, and 92.3 in the San Geronimo Valley. And KWMR is underwritten by St. Columba's Inverness Episcopal Church and Retreat House. St. Columba's Church holds sermons and gatherings, and the Retreat House offers in-person retreats to individuals and small groups. More information about St. Columba's podcasts and events at stcolumbusinverness.org.
All right, let's play our little intro song. Good morning, everybody. This is KWMR, 90.5 Point Reyes Station, 89.9 Bolinas, 92.3 San Geronimo Valley. We are just getting our guests sorted here, but Dallas and Liz, how you doing?
Top of the morning to you.
Yeah, doing pretty good. How about you, Seamus?
I'm not so bad. Not so bad.
All right. Good.
Rain finally stopped. Sunshine.
I enjoyed that rain.
I did too.
It was a lot more than we expected.
So much more.
Yeah, I was a lot more refreshed than I anticipated this weekend.
Well, I mean, while we're talking about weather, actually, might as well talk about the weather for the rest of the week. Actually, looks like we actually have a sunny week ahead of us with highs in the lower to mid 60s and lows in the mid 40s at nighttime.
Chilly.
Yeah, a little chilly at nighttime, but no more rain. That was it for a little bit.
And windy though.
A little windy for the next few days. Yeah, you know, hopefully it'll pass.
Tis the season.
That being said, we need the wind, cool the oceans down. It's already a bit warmer than it usually is. So,
yeah, I think I had a biologist on a tour about a month ago who were during the heat wave. Apparently, the water temperature in the area was about 2 to 4 degrees warmer than it normally is this time of year, which is a little scary. You know?
I know. So hopefully that wind will come in, push that warm water off, and let that cold water come up. So that being said, if you're what we're talking about on the water as well, if you're going out there today, your tide's from Marshall, California. Our next high tide is 4.1 feet at 9:37 a.m. today, and our next low tide is 0.1 feet at 4:35.
Okie dokie.
Yeah, and I'll pass it off to Liz to introduce today's guest.
Thanks, guys. I feel like our guest today is a local legend and needs absolutely no introductions, but we'll do a little bit here. We have Megan Isidore from the River Otter Ecology Project. She's the co-founder and executive director over there. And she didn't exactly start off as a scientist. She has a degree in English from the College of William and Mary. But shortly after moving to West Marin in the late 90s, her love affair began with watersheds and then on to the river otters. And she is a champion of them, and she's won many local awards and honors. The 2022 Bay Nature Magazine Local Hero Award, and then also some little snaps, and numerous others, really going back to the inception of River Otter Ecology Project. So thanks so much for joining us on the show today, Megan. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And we should say welcome back, because you're one of our first people.
One of our first people,
us.
Yeah.
It's been almost 5 years now, so, you know, it's nice to have
We should
you
be
back.
Doing an annual update with you.
we're a pretty busy group.
Well, nice. So for folks who don't know much about the River Ecology Project, do you want to give a rundown on some of the bulk of the work that you do?
Sure. We started in 2012 because we noticed there were lots of river otters around, and we were curious about them, really. It was about curiosity as to what was going on in our creeks. And we discovered very little was known about river otters in the Bay Area, and they were considered not occurring here. And we knew that was not right because we had seen them. So we started our community science otter spotter program to find the river otters in the Bay Area. And at the same time, we started a research program mostly in Point Reyes and GGNRA and extending into some other areas of Marin, and started researching otter populations here. And that's what we have been doing for most of our time. And then in the past couple of years, we've really, in the past 5 years, we spread out a lot into advocacy and also into other states, which is very exciting.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't realize that.
We just learned that. Yeah, tell us more. Dallas and I were so excited to see that.
Yeah.
Well, it's been really fun. And what happened was we were looking at our programs and at the size of our organization, which is tiny. There were only two of us. Now there are three because we have a program manager, Katie Ballinger, who's a terrific addition to our staff. But we were looking at our programs and saying, you know, we're so small, but we want to have a bigger impact. And how can we have a bigger impact? Our most successful program, or one of our most successful programs, is Otter Spotter, our community science program.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it was already spreading out organically across the country. And we were getting river otter sightings from all over. I mean, Florida, East Coast, Midwest, everywhere. So we decided that we would use our platform, our Otter Spotter platform, and our experience with building stewardship to help other small water protective organizations to do the same thing in their areas. And that's how Otters for Waters began. And it's been going on for about a little over 2.5 years now. We have four partners: Virginia, Arizona, Utah, and Minnesota. And we love working with the folks. It's been really, really fun. We've learned a lot. They've learned a lot. They're finding otters where they didn't know there were otters before, and building stewardship around them, communities of people who are attracted by otters, because who's not?
They're so cute.
And so that's working out great. It's very exciting. And we'd like to scale it in time. It will take time, like everything.
Yeah, but it feels like it's been this really like natural progression. When we were preparing for the show, Dallas and I were, you know, doing our research and looking back at when it was founded and whatnot. And we were like, it must have been like 2012, 2013, something like that. Because we remember some friends of ours like taking you out on a motorboat to place some of your first cameras on Tomales Bay. So it's really exciting to see how things have grown and evolved since then. We're so stoked for you.
Well, thank you so much. It's been quite a ride, and we'll be 15 years next year. So cool.
You know, in revisiting the show we did with you a number of years ago, one thing that kind of was really surprising and a little bit of an aha moment for me was how recent the resurgence of the otter population is in West Marin. It wasn't all that long ago. There really wasn't any.
Well, it was, I think the first time otters were seen in West Marin was by Rich Stalkup in like 1988. Yeah. And since then, and I think there were probably otters here.
Okay. But there wasn't many, right?
Not many.
And people not looking for them.
And they weren't being observed, and people didn't know about them. Now everyone knows about them, and we see them all the time. And their numbers have definitely increased in Marin, for sure.
Yeah, we've been seeing it on Tomales Bay increase pretty significantly every year. You know, like, I wouldn't say significantly, but steadily. And if we think back at the beginning of it, there's a lot of, like, thriving families all over Tomales Bay.
Yeah, there's different little pockets of them, and like it was always like a special treat to see one on a tour when we first started working out here, which was like 2010.
Now I expect it.
I mean, you can almost count on it.
I know, and that's a really wonderful thing. Yeah. And it tells us that our waters are in fairly good shape, because those otters need so much food in order to stay healthy and thrive and have healthy young and keep them. And all of that is happening. So that's very, very good news for our waterways.
What's in terms of like long-term history of the otter population, river otters being out here? They were pretty much hunted to almost non-existence over a period of time, right? And then it's been a resurgence in I don't know, recent decades. Do I have that correctly?
Yes and no.
Sea otters, that's true. For training. I think, and I'll let Megan speak more on it, but I think it was more of like water quality
the river otters was more water quality related.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. The sea otters really were hunted to almost complete extinction in California, and across the nation, river otters were trapped into almost extinction into a lot of places. Here in Marin, they weren't really trapped that much. Okay. There was some trapping, but trapping ended in 1962. And in Marin since then, they have been coming back, but I think what Katie says is right. It's more the water quality and the fish quality and the amount of food available for them and the better habitat. There have been so many creek restorations and river restorations across California, and especially in the Bay Area. And those restorations have had an effect on so many species, and river otters are one of them.
Yeah, I noticed when we a lot of times on the show, when we talk about a certain species, the whole story is not necessarily about the species, but the whole ecosystem that provides for the species and how hand in hand they are.
That's exactly right. And our organization, even though we have river otters in our name and we love otters and we concentrate them on them, we're really more about water quality and ensuring that our waterways are healthy. And we use river otters shamelessly because they're so adorable and they're our adorable ambassador.
Do you think they would have been found in Tomales Bay back when there would have been more sea otters present?
Yes, I do. And the reason I think that is because sea otters and river otters both inhabit Alaska and northern areas. Yeah. Up where the sea otters are abundant, river otters are abundant as well. I have seen, this is great, I have seen sea otters and river otters meet.
I was just going to mention that. I saw the photo of that, like out by Drake's, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, what?
At the Chimney Rock area. There
really?
Was a sea otter. Yeah, a sea otter was passing through a few years ago. And there were four river otters who happened to notice it. Of course they did. There was their giant cousin coming to visit. And all four of them raced out and surrounded the sea otter, very fascinated, because river otters are really curious animals. And if there's someone in their area, they're going to come and check it out. And they didn't get too close to it. Sea otters are big, much bigger than river otters, and they're pretty fierce. Both of those animals are fierce predators. But they followed it around, and they followed it around the point and north for a little while. And then after a while, those river otters returned, but the sea otter carried on.
That's fascinating.
So maybe we'll never have sea otters here because the river otters are too territorial. That's a joke. I'm just kidding.
I think the river otters would not really care. It's like, river otters are smart, and they're not going to go after an animal that's a whole bunch bigger than they are and equally fierce, although they do go after sharks on occasion.
Really?
In our waters. We have seen them on our camera trap videos pulling in both gray smoothhound sharks and leopard sharks.
Oh, wow.
Wow, no kidding.
Pretty amazing. They're very fierce little predators.
Totally. It always makes me think about like Abbott's Lagoon,
right,
when they're figuring out the white pelican, how to get hunt white pelicans.
Oh, the brown pelicans.
Brown pelicans.
Oh, they're hunting the brown pelicans.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes,
yeah.
They hunt them. They have no trouble taking down the brown pelicans, even though they have a 6-foot wingspan. They grab them by the feet and they drown them.
Gosh,
it's it's awful to watch, but they're hungry. It's an incredible big meal for them. And not only is that a big meal for the otters themselves, but they can't eat it all at once. So they'll cache it. They'll leave it in the lagoon to come back for later. And this is so funny. We just discovered this. Very often, coyotes that are watching from the shore will come out and drag the pelican carcass back and finish it off in the dunes. Just so interesting, because here are these river otters who are predators and who are leaving food around for other predators.
A little symbiosis there.
Was Abbott's Lagoon the first place or only place that it's been documented where...
No, it was documented at Rodeo Lagoon many years ago. I think it was in the mid-90s. And then the pelicans at Rodeo, they stopped using the part of the lagoon where they were getting eaten.
Smart birds.
Right.
The smart birds, but in the past couple of years, they've come back.
Dun, dun, dun.
The pelicans are back, and the pelicans are once again getting taken at Rodeo Lagoon. So that's, it's really interesting, because as we did our study, we only did a one-year study at Abbott's. And after the year that we did our study, the pelicans paid no attention to their brethren getting killed and eaten. And that was in 2023, I think. In 2024 and 2025, the pelicans started paying attention. They learned. They realized that there was a predator out there that was going to get them in the lagoon. So they would keep a good eye out and fly up when the river otter showed up. That doesn't seem to be happening again right now.
And it's interesting, is it that it's just the brown pelicans? Is it like, are the white pelicans faster, smarter, or just not there?
The white pelicans do come, but I've never seen a river otter get a white pelican. I think the brown pelicans are resting on the lagoon in big, big groups. Uh-huh. And I think a lot of times they just don't notice the otters when they're in a big group like that. And the white pelicans tend to be in smaller groups. And I don't know if that's a reason, but it seems likely to me that they're just more alert because they're in smaller groups.
Does it take a number of the otters to take down a pelican? Do they work in groups in their hunting?
They do sometimes work in groups, and the mothers teach the young.
Okay.
And they'll go out as a group. But a single otter can easily take a pelican because they come up, they're sneaky. They come up underneath them. Did you see the grab video? Their feet.
Sorry, did you see the video of Daniel Dietrich of the coyote and river otter encounter?
Coyote and river otter encounter?
Yeah, apparently.
You mean when he was grabbing the pelican?
No, there was a coyote trying to cross a little creek area, and the otter was obviously telling him not to, and the coyote looked a little confused, like, I'm going to go anyways. And he started swimming in, and the river otter swam around behind him, underneath him, and kind of bit his leg.
Oh,
and he noticed the coyote get out, and he looks at his leg like, oh, man, that thing bit me. Yeah. It was pretty wild.
The coyotes that was at Abbott's, and at Abbott's, the coyotes and most places, really, the coyotes and the river otters have a very wary relationship. Mm. They're not exactly enemies, but they're not really friends either. And the coyotes know, the river otters know the coyotes will take their food if they can. Mm. Coyotes are really good at that, and river otters don't appreciate it one little bit. But I have also seen coyotes and river otters kind of playing, more or less. And that
really?
Was when we first started our project and had a camera up at Northern Tamales Bay at one of our Bowdoin sites. And there was a rock about the size of a basketball on the beach. And at one point, we had a mother otter there who considered that her beach. Her pups were up the hill a little bit from that little beach. And a coyote came up onto the beach, and the river otter ran down and started chasing it around the rock. And it chased it round and round that basketball-sized rock until finally the two of them actually started playing. Not touching each other, but playing the way dogs play, you know, jumping forward and lunging back and jumping forward. It was hilarious and fun.
That's
and they did this for a couple of minutes, and they did it a couple of times. And then we didn't see that again.
Wow.
I love that. You know, sometimes coyotes play with badgers as well, you know, kind of like have a side-by-side relationship. So I imagine that.
It's really great. And river otters, I've also seen river otters chase coyotes off many times. If they get tired of them and they don't want them around, they just chase them. And coyotes are way too smart to engage with the river otter with those big sharp teeth and those very, very strong jaws.
And river otters, you know, they make some interesting warning sounds. I remember doing a night tour and thinking I was hearing an osprey above me. And
it's kind of similar
actually
to that.
All the guests I was with, I'm like, look, keep your eyes in the sky. I don't know, there's an osprey about to dive bomb us or something like that. And it turns out we had gotten too close to a river otter and I think her young, and she was making like this bird chirping, almost osprey type of sounds.
River otters will chirp at each other a lot. It's a contact call. And they do that. They also make a really great sound that is called a we call it it's a sort of a huffing sound. Like that. Yeah.
Huh.
And they also scream, they whine, they make all kinds of noises. But the chirping sound is what we hear most often. And if you're looking for otters, you might think you're hearing birds, but it might be otters.
Oh, yeah. We were all looking up at the sky at night thinking we were going to get dive bombed by an osprey. And it turns out we just got too close to these river otters. I think it was, like I said, a mom and some young ones.
Which,
speaking of which, you know, I want to kind of touch on they travel a lot in groups, various sizes, right? So a lot of times I see them in like a group of like five or six or four. Are those family units? And then they could get up to like groups of 20, right?
Well, they can get big. The largest group I've ever seen together was about 12 or 14 otters. And usually a group that big is a group of males who are obviously hanging out, playing, doing the bro thing. Very happy, they're really sociable animals. And they can travel in mother and pup groups. And a lot of times that's more than one mother. It can be related females with their associated pups hanging out together. And that's what we see most often on Tamales Bay, because Tamales Bay is such a great place for mother and pup otters. It's somewhat protected, and it's also full of fish and crabs and all the other things river otters love to eat.
What all do they like to eat?
I was going
to
say, I think it's really diversified what they eat, it sounds like.
It's very diversified. They're not that picky about their food. It must be meat. They don't eat any vegetation, not purposely anyway. And they eat everything from aquatic insects to crabs to mussels and
to pelicans.
Pelicans and all kinds of water birds. They eat a lot of cormorants. They eat a lot of gulls. Yeah. Sometimes scoters. What else do they eat? Grebes. Anything really that they can get their teeth around. Lots and lots of crayfish, of course. Crayfish are among their favorite foods because they're slow and they're easy to catch. And for river otters who have high energy needs, they want their food to be a big bang for a buck.
Yeah. They have quite a fast metabolism, I understand, right? They constantly have to eat. Yeah.
They do. They've done some studies about how quickly food goes through their bodies, and a fish meal can go through their body in an hour.
Oh, wow.
Really
fast.
Word. And they eat about 15% of their body weight in food per day.
Jeez. Yeah, that's a hungry hippo right there.
Which, you know, just goes back to that's how they are such a good indicator of the health of an ecosystem, right? Like when you have to eat so much and there's still plenty to eat and there's still like multiple families and everyone's thriving and their numbers keep increasing. Like, yeah, they are the perfect little ambassadors.
They are good ambassadors. They're very interesting to watch. They're fun to watch. And they're so playful. And people love that. And plus, they have those mammal faces that people really react to. The big nose, the big eyes, the wide face. They're pretty cute and adorable. So, except if they're trying to bite you, then they're not cute or adorable.
Is that happen on occasion, human otter encounters?
Very seldom.
Yeah.
I mean, there are otters all over the country at this point. And think about how much, especially in the summertime, people are in the water, in rivers and lakes and streams. And there are very, very few attacks. But when they do happen, they're really scary and they can be really harmful.
Yeah.
So people need to stay away from otters if they can. If I'm swimming and I see an otter nearby, I will get out of the water and hang because you just can't tell. I mean, I talked to some state parks divers who were doing some training in, I think it was the Russian River, and they had a group of otters come and hang with them while they were doing their training for 2 or 3 days, which I thought was fascinating and would make me nervous. And they were nervous at first, but then they all got used to each other and it was just fun and interesting.
Wow. That is interesting. You know, we were talking about the health of otters in a watershed. I noticed on your website you do some testing with, like, heavy metals that might end up in their system, and that being one of the things that might be harmful to their health or indicator if there's heavy metals in the watershed. Do you want to speak more on that?
Sure. We did a study a few years ago with California Department of Fish and Wildlife and collected 10 roadkill, or was it 20? I think it was 20 roadkilled river otters to do a study and find out what was going on with them. Were there heavy metals? Was it anything worrisome? And the news was really good and bad. Bad because when we didn't find anything much, I said, okay, we're done with that. We don't have to test any more otters. But good because it told us, you know, there isn't anything terribly dangerous in these waters river otters. They did find a little bit of, what is it called? The rat poison, rodenticide. Mm-hmm. In their blood, but there is almost always rodenticide in almost any wildlife in California at this point. It's really shocking and terrible. It's one of the many things we need to do more about.
Yeah, here's your PSA, folks. Yeah. Knock it off with the rodenticide.
Knock it off, yes.
Get an owl box.
There's a fabulous organization called RATS. Rodents, raptors are the best solution. Look them up, rats.org. Support them if you can. They're doing amazing work trying to get the rodenticides out of our waters.
That's awesome.
Oh, wow. Well, we're coming up at the 9:30 hour. We're going to take a quick break. If you're just tuning in, this is KWMR. 90.5 Point Reyes Station, 89.9 Bolinas, and 92.3 San Geronimo Valley. And we are talking, Isidore, about river otters and the River Otter Ecology Project. And we have a quick message from Liz before we get to a song here.
Two of them. KWMR is supported by Cabaline, Country Emporium, and Saddlery, the first certified green business in West Marin, a purveyor for outdoor adventurers and travel essentials since 1978. Cabaline offers natural, sustainably produced clothing and footwear and also supplies for horses and pets. Open every day on Main Street in Point Reyes Station, 415-663-8303. And KWMR is underwritten by the Environmental Action Committee of West Marin, presenting the 17th annual Point Reyes Birding and Nature Festival. Over 50 events for birders of all ages will take place in Marin and Sonoma counties from April 24th to 26th. More information at pointreyesbirdingfestival.org.
And with that said, I think we'll do a little song, Take Me to the River. Is that how it goes?
Something like that.
By Al Green, and we'll be right back.
Dedicate this song to little Junior Parker, a cousin of mine that's gone on, but we'd like to kind of carry on in his name by saying,
I don't know why I love you like I do, after all the changes that you put me through, used all my money and my cigarettes. We'll be right back.
All right. Well, welcome back. This is Westmore Natural Hour on KWMR, and we are talking with Megan Isidore about river otters and the River Otter Ecology Project. Who wants to start us off here?
Yeah. Did the otter spotter actually inspire iNaturalist?
Oh,
we were talking about that because
I think you did it first.
Community science this whole time.
Oh, hold on. Oh, hold bring on. It back. There we go. Sorry, Megan.
Now we're back. Yeah.
Okay, here you are.
Hello, everybody. That was an awesome song, yeah. Take Me to the River. I love that song. I've loved David Byrne forever, and I'm going to see him this Thursday for the first time.
That was the Al Green version.
Yeah. I know it was. But David Byrne wrote the song.
Yep. Oh, I thought it was vice versa. Okay. Yeah, I didn't realize that. Huh.
That's so cool. Yeah.
You're not nearly as old as I am.
So the question about we wanted to dive more into the community science question, and we were debating.
I was giving honors because I think the Otter Spotter came out before iNaturalist.
Yeah,
or around the same time at very least.
Well, actually, this all should go to the Humboldt. It used to be Humboldt State University. River otter researcher up at Humboldt who started his otter spotter project 30 or 40 years ago and has been studying the recovery of otters in Humboldt Bay forever. He just retired recently. Jeff Black is his name. And we patterned our otter spotter on his. We talked to him about it and what he discovered through it and how it could work for us. And that's how we started Otter Spotter. And we actually thought about using iNat when we started, but at that time it wasn't appropriate for the information we were looking for. Mm. So we ended up starting our own ArcGIS Otter Spotter program. And now it's interesting to me, there are so many community science projects and platforms all over the place. It's confusing, actually, because there are so many, but they all basically do the same thing. They all harness the power of people who are curious about their local areas and are interested in helping support wildlife and wild places.
Nice. And in terms of like the data you collect with some of this community science observational work, how is it utilized and what has it been telling you in recent
years? Oh, so much. We use it for all kinds of purposes and all kinds of agencies use it as well. And nice. What the only thing that Otter Spotter really tells us is where there are river otters and also where they're getting hit by cars a lot.
Mm. Oh yeah.
It helps us understand where to put our advocacy efforts for river otters and other wildlife not getting hit by cars. And right now that is happening on Highway 37, where we got Caltrans to leave some fencing up that they had put up for a restoration that they're doing there. And we said, hey, you know, there's a culvert here. The otters aren't using it. They are crossing the road all the time. They're getting hit by cars all the time. Can you help us? They were fabulous. And they kept that fencing up and they said, we'll leave that fencing up while even beyond the restoration that they were doing at that time. And they did leave it up. But then the road got paved and they took down that fencing. And after they took down the fencing, otters started getting hit again.
Oh, really?
So we're working with them again to hopefully get that fencing put back up.
And when the fencing's
up...
You
want to drop a pin where that is, maybe?
Even a signage.
Just someone could go out there in the dark of night and just put it up.
Put the fence up. Yeah. I wish we could do that. I think that they would like to, and I hope that they do it. We also help them with designs for a culvert that would be more attractive to river otters, because otters really should not be crossing that road at all.
Right.
They need to be fenced away, and fencing works better than anything else to keep otters out of where they shouldn't be. Because they don't, at night, when it's not very busy, they don't realize that there are cars zooming down there at 500 miles an hour. They just think, oh, the road is open, I'll cross. And they get hit all the time.
Is there a certain time of the year where the those encounters happen more often?
It does seem to happen a little more often in the spring during flooding times. Mm-hmm. When roads are flooded, I think it's harder to see them. And I think otters also move around a little bit more in this during spring floods.
And is the fencing needed, is it like a pretty simple thing? Like they kind of, I imagine they're like, nah, that looks too hard, right? Like,
or does it have to be electric fences?
Oh, no, it doesn't have to be electric. It's pretty simple. It's just the plastic fencing. It's strong, but it has to go down to the ground so that they can't slide under it because they're good at sliding through and under and around things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I love the idea of like creating more of these wildlife corridors. I know they're looking at it right now for the Newts, Central Llano Valley. So like, or even just having the fences to allow them to kind of be funneled into the areas.
When we were doing research on all this, particularly on a spot on Nicasio Valley Road where otters are getting hit with great regularity, I talked to the guy who runs the California Roadkill Observation System out of UC Davis, Fraser Schilling is his name. And
That's an amazing thing that exists.
Right.
I never heard of that.
Yeah. Oh, you haven't heard of it?
No.
It's in the whole state of California. And I think they're also somewhere on the East Coast. And they just collect where wildlife is roadkilled, which is everywhere, but they look for hot spots and they look for ways to avoid it. And when I talked to Fraser, he felt like along the Nicasio Valley Road, fencing would be the only good way to go. I was originally thinking, you know, we should have a second culvert there. There's one culvert, but it's not in the right place. It's not where the otters are getting hit. And Fraser said, no, you need fencing along that roadway. So we went to Department of Public Works, the Marin Department of Public Works, and hopefully they will be helping us get some fencing up there. We just started the conversation with them recently.
Interesting. I know, like, for tracking river otters locally and other fields you work in, there's the community science part, but then there's also like some of the technology you use as well, like in your field work and tracking otters. Can you talk a little bit about some of the other tools you use to see what they're doing?
Sure. We have used, since we began, we've used trail cameras,
nice.
Motion detector trail cameras to count otters, basically, to find out how many there are, how many pups they are, whether they make it through the season or not, look at otter behavior, what are they bringing in, what are we seeing, just all interesting and fascinating information. We've also tried collecting scat for genetic samples and had some success with that. It's really pretty difficult to do. It's very, very expensive. And we have done some bacterial studies, testing for salmonella and vibrio. And what else have we done? Those things mostly. We worked on a little eDNA project last summer with a student from UC Merced, but we have not heard back from him as far as results go.
Interesting. And by the way, with the scat, that shouldn't be confused with the other kind of gelatinous stuff that my dog used to love to roll in.
He still does if he finds it.
Yeah. Which is like a, I don't know, is it like, they use
it's jelly.
We call it jelly.
Yeah.
Okay, like this it's kind of musky.
Yeah, it's stinky. It's an intestinal secretion that helps to keep their intestines from getting carved up by fish bones and crab shells.
I thought it was like a territorial marking. Sort of thing.
Well, they do scent mark a lot, and that is not especially territorial, but it gives them information about each other. Okay. So when you see river otters rolling around on the sand or in their own latrine sites, which they do all the time, they're getting information. Who's there? Are they related to them? Are there pups? What are they eating? Are they healthy? All that kind of information. And we don't know particularly in great detail what that is because the otters haven't told us. But we know that they do get that kind of information. Is anybody in estrus? All that sort of thing.
Okay. And so that's totally different than the secretions they leave from their digestive tract, huh?
Well, it's that they all have odors and they are really sensitive to odors. So I wouldn't say it's totally different, okay. But scat and jelly are different.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Scat is poop and jelly is jelly.
Yeah. Anyways, it's been the bane of my existence when my dog gets into it. It's potent stuff, that yes. jelly. It is potent.
Yes. I know. The thing about otters are not stinky. They're very stinky little critters.
Oh, yeah.
And it's actually not bad for us because a lot of times if we're walking along doing a survey looking for otter latrine sites, we can smell them before we see them.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, well, I learned something new about the jelly. I always thought it was more of like a scent thing, you know, or like a...
Well, she's not saying it's
not.
Yeah,
she's not saying it's not, but it's, anyways.
It's not specifically for scent.
Right.
Like they do have scent glands, like on their back feet. If you ever see a dead otter and you look at on their back, the underside of their back feet, you'll see little round scent glands that are there. And that's why they do what we call the scat dance, where they poop, and at the same time as they're doing that, they make their back feet go up and down. They do a little scat dance. And that is to spread their scent around.
Interesting. So in all your monitoring of the otters, is there any kind of unexpected, either in the data or something you've witnessed with the otters that found very surprising?
Or favorite moment?
Oh, I have so many favorite moments. You know, so watching the pups and the mothers together is interesting. One of my favorite moments was when a mother was out fishing in the middle of a lagoon. She was way out in the middle, and her pup was gnawing on a fish on the bank. And then here came a coyote up behind the pup. And it was a little pup, small enough for the coyote to get it. And the pup wandered into the water quite slowly and went about 10 feet out and then just swam there, staring at the coyote, which rolled in the remains of the fish. And then the coyote kind of ambled back into the reeds, and the little otter followed him the whole way. It was fascinated by this coyote.
Wow.
And the mother, meanwhile, paid zero attention to any of that going on. She was just hunting. So that was a fun moment.
You know, in this conversation, I now feel like there should be a TV show or a movie made about a coyote and a river otter.
A children's book?
Yeah, I think so, too.
It sounds like there's a lot of like interesting interactions with the two species.
It would be fun. You know, otters really do inspire people to write children's books. And in two of our partners, in the one in Virginia and the one in Utah, both of them have children's books about otters. I have a children's book about otters. We all do, because everyone loves them. But otter and coyote, I like that idea.
Just sounds like you derive a lot of real-world experience, you know, into it.
Otter and coyote go to the lagoon. Otter and coyote go to the beach. Otter and coyote go to the river.
Circle of rock.
Yeah, circle of rock. Otter and coyote play. Mother otter chases coyote off the beach.
You know, I also wanted to touch on, or we all wanted to touch on some of your outreach, part of River Ecology Project is some of the outreach work you do. And I'm curious on some of your outreach efforts.
We do. We do a lot of presentations like this, or in person or over Zoom. We do lots of those. And going out into different states has been really, really interesting because we're so used to living in California, living in our very blue state where everybody, many people think the same way we do about conservation and about rivers and about politics. It's really, really fun and interesting to be in other states, in other places that have different ideas and have different stakeholders. I love that. I love finding common cause among different stakeholders and different kinds of people. I'm an ecologist at heart, so to me that's ecology, yeah. You know, finding out how people work together or don't work together. It's really, mm-hmm. really fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and it seems like it'd be easy, or not easy, but there's a lot of common ground to find when you're talking about the health of a watershed, because we all benefit from that, right?
There is, and different stakeholders really can find common ground, and we do, and it happens more often than you would think from seeing everything that's going on in politics these days, but mm-hmm. it is possible, and it can and does work.
Love it. Well, we're getting close towards the end here. You know, for folks that are feeling inspired, what are the best ways for them to get involved or to help save the otters?
Oh, there's so many things that people can do to get involved. You can go on our website and look at how can I help save otters. It's one of our resource tabs. But the most important thing that people can do is vote, is be involved in politics, is speak up for nature, for conservation, is remind all of our leaders every chance you get that we only have one planet and this planet is in trouble. And it's not trouble that we can't fix, but it's getting harder and harder the longer we wait to fix it. I think people know that, but the way to do it that I have found to be most effective is to get to know your watershed really well. Mm. Get to know what's going on. Be curious. Ask questions. Don't let people put you off, which is very typical. We're in conservation. We're used to taking two steps forward and two steps back, or two steps forward and one step back. But we don't want to always do that. We'd like to take five steps forward, and we need to do that now. So I would say get involved, learn about your watershed. Just go for a walk. Mm-hmm. Look and see what you see. If you see an otter, put in an otter sighting. If you're in Arizona and you see a beaver, put in a beaver sighting. We just started a beaver project in Arizona with our partners there. And we're looking for beavers and beaver dams and signs of beavers. And it is all completely connected. It's all about our waterways. And do that.
Nice. That actually brings up another question in terms of some of the challenges and that river otters might face going forward. Is there... have you noticed much direct correlation as of now with climate change and river otter populations or some of their territories they operate in or don't operate in anymore due to some climatic changes?
I have, you know, truthfully, as far as climate change goes directly, I have not seen that happen yet. The only thing that has changed a little bit is that when we go through droughts, which we have done before, but they're likely to get worse and worse as time goes on. When we go through droughts, there's more of a competition for resources. So if river otters are squished into smaller and smaller places because of drought or sea level rise, or if the oceans collapse or the waterways collapse and they can't get their food, then they get squished into smaller spaces and don't thrive as much.
That makes a lot of sense. Of course, river otters have the benefit of being both saltwater and freshwater inhabitants.
They are. Yeah, they're comfortable in saltwater, but they do need freshwater to keep their fur clean and to drink as well.
Right.
They're dependent on it. So that's why a lot of times in Point Reyes, you'll see river otters clustering around where the creeks come out into the bay or into the ocean.
How close can families' territories be? Like different families?
Well, river otters are not very territorial, actually. Oh, okay. The females and males don't generally hang out much together unless they are mating. Mm-hmm. And the males are not particularly territorial unless they're mating. Then they become more territorial and sometimes fight. But I've actually never seen a river otter fight on our cameras or in the field or anywhere. But apparently they do. I've heard that they do sometimes. The females hang out in really wonderful mother, sister, daughter groups with their associated pups. And that's really fun to see. They're a flexible animal. They can be happy on their own as well, or they can be happy being sociable.
Interesting. Well, It's hard not to love an otter. And thank you for sharing all this wonderful knowledge with us, Megan. I think it's time for us to head on out. And appreciate you being back on our show.
Well, I can't thank you enough. It's always fun to see you all on the water or to talk to you here. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we'll have to come get you back on again in the future with some new updates. And yeah.
And not so far in the future.
Yeah. We're going to do it every 5 years.
Annual report.
Okay. I'll keep our work up so we have lots to talk about.
Nice. All right, friends. Well, I think we're going to go out on a song. We are going to go out on a song called The Otter by Camp. Mm-hmm.
I am floating in deep water, like the unfamiliar otter, in love with someone's daughter. I'm going to lose float, and I know that I love her for the stars and all they cover. Thank you.
You are listening to KWMR.